Thank you for listening to this message from the pulpit of Coon Rapids Baptist Church in the suburbs of Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Let's turn in our copy of the scriptures to Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter number 2. Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Psalms is in the middle of your Bible, probably Psalms, then Proverbs, then Ecclesiastes chapter number 2. How exciting. We're already in the second chapter of Ecclesiastes. We're making some progress here. We are on a treasure hunt. The hunt for meaning in life. And our treasure hunt is led by an expert. It's led by a king, a wise man, a man with lots of money, a man with the great ability to really go on a search for the meaning of life. We are on this hunt for the meaning of life. Last time our hunt led us at the end of chapter 1 to look at wisdom for meaning. But as we look to wisdom, we could not find meaning there. This time, let's see where our hunt will lead us. Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and verse number 1. You'll notice your text in front of you where the preacher says, I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. It looks like our search this time is headed to Pleasure Island. The preacher was addressing people that very much were just like our day and time. They were very much like the American public. They were a secular audience, largely. And he's describing to them life lived under the sun, where life is lived as if all that exists is life here on this globe, life here on this earth, with nothing bigger, nothing longer, nothing greater than simply living on this earth. And so Solomon, as it were, in the book of Ecclesiastes, steps into their shoes. He sees life as they saw it. He looks at life from their perspective. What would it be like if all you had to do was to live life on this planet and there was nothing greater, nothing bigger? What would be the meaning of life? Much of Ecclesiastes is brought out from that perspective until he gives you the answers that there is something bigger besides what's on this ball of dirt here. That's the only way that you can find a meaningful life. And so here he is in Ecclesiastes, and he's trying to lead us on this search. At the end of chapter 1, as I mentioned a moment ago, we look to wisdom and philosophy and education to try to find the meaning of life. People many times look there. It's the high road in some regards. Surely intelligence, surely a good education, surely philosophy and all of that will help us come to some sort of idea of what meaning in life is. We try to solve the riddles of this universe and figure out the deep questions in this life. We look for that. And many people start there, but when they cannot find satisfaction in the meaning and the meaning of life from philosophy and solving these deep questions, they begin to turn from wisdom to folly. They begin to turn from the philosophy and all of that, so much of the wisdom, to the foolishness. And not in every sense of it, but certainly in some senses, what we're going to see now in chapter number 2 is that exact turn. If philosophy doesn't satisfy, if I can't find the deep meaning to life just by looking at it philosophically and exploring it on my own, then maybe I should just live for pleasure. Maybe I should just live it up. Maybe life is all about having fun. If I can't figure out why we're here, then at least I ought to enjoy it while it lasts here. Make the most of it. If there's no reason for life, then live to the fullest. Hedonistic pleasures here. And the first point that Solomon is giving, if he is the preacher here, and I believe that he is, as he is a preacher, his first point is in chapters 1 and 2 to discuss pleasure. Will pleasure bring us some sort of satisfaction and meaning in life? Some people find pleasure in wisdom and intelligence and education. Some people find pleasure in the categories we're going to describe today. The meaning of life. He's looking for it now in this matter of pleasure. And you notice in verse number 1, he says, I said in my heart, he's carrying on a conversation with himself. I'm sure you never talk to yourself. Someone says that it's only concerning if you answer yourself. But Solomon is carrying on a conversation here, and he decides that he's going to prove himself. He's going to put something to the test. He's going to explore it and examine it and test it out and see if this will really bring meaning here. He's going to look at the category of mirth and pleasure. The word mirth isn't probably a word that you used this morning. It's not a word that's used every day in our lives. The word mirth is a word simply, though, that refers to joy and happiness and gladness. He's going to see if life can be found and meaning and significance can be found, satisfaction in this life can be found in joy and happiness and gladness. Is that where life is? And so he tells himself, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore, he gives himself this command, enjoy pleasure. Enjoy this pleasure that's out here. The word pleasure can bring the ideas of something that agrees with our emotions and our sensations, something that is really just satisfying and enjoyable in that sense. In fact, the word itself is the word many times translated in the Old Testament for good. He says, I want you, in order to test you, I want you to go out and I want you to enjoy good. Can I say it this way? I want you to enjoy the good life. I want you to try the good life. If answers to life's meaning are not in wisdom, maybe answers to life's meaning are in the good life. And listen, I want to remind you this morning that when we talk about the good life here, people are not really talking about what is morally good. They are not today in society, when they're talking about having the good life, they're not talking about living righteously. They're not talking about living for God's honor and glory. They're not talking about what is ethically good. They're talking about the fun life, the easy life. They're talking about easy street and just having a lot of fun. They're talking about entertainment and joy and ease and no problems and no hardships and no stress. It's the Walt Disney World life where you wish upon a star and all your dreams come true. It's the fairy tale life that always ends with everyone living happily ever after. And listen, the good life might be something for you. You think this would be good and somebody else thinks that something would be good and somebody else sees it from a little different perspective. Yes, we all have different definitions of what the good life really is. But Solomon, in all of his wealth and all of his wisdom, you're going to see, tries so many different aspects of it that it covers all the different areas that this morning you might be thinking would be the really good life. And how many times it is that people in our world, they look to the good life as being the thing that's going to give them meaning in life. Nobody looks at the hardships in life and says, oh, if I could just have some hardships, that would give me meaning in life. If I could just have a stressful day at work, boy, that would give me a meaningful life. If I could just have a neighbor that was the most annoying neighbor in the entire neighborhood there, that would give me meaning in this life. Nobody ever says that. But everybody says, oh, listen, as long as you're happy, as long as you're having fun, as long as you enjoy your job, as long as you have fun with your family, as long as you enjoy it, that's the meaning of life to everybody. The meaning of life is the fun. It's the mirth. It's enjoying the good life. It's the fun dates. It's the great food. It's the happiness with family. It's the fun events. It's the smooth, peaceful homes. It's the perfect job. And that is supposed to bring happiness. The good life. And the question we have before us in these first 11 verses we're going to see this morning is this simple question. Well, what good is the good life? Is the good life really able to give you joy and satisfaction? Is it really able to give you meaning and significance and an understanding of your real purpose in life? Is it going to answer life's questions? What good is the good life? What do you do when the good life isn't so good? Solomon is going to look at this, and I want you to notice back in chapter 2 and verse number 1, I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity. Solomon's going to go off into the good life here. And boy, we're getting all excited, and this is going to be fun. I mean, I would love to try out the good life. I mean, some of the things that he talks about, maybe not all of them, but some of the things that he talks about here, I would be happy. Sign me up. I'll volunteer. This is going to be fun. I'll put these things to the test. This is going to be great. You're getting all thirsty. You're getting all excited because you're going to talk about the good life. You're going to explore the good life. And Solomon comes in here and rains on our parade before we even get out of the gate, before we even get started. He says, I'm going to check out mirth and pleasure, but just let me tell you, it's all vanity. Well, that's great, Solomon. That's really exciting here. I was getting all pumped up thinking maybe life is found in the fun life, in the good life. And how appropriate it is for Solomon to just start off that way saying, this is not going to be where the answer is found in life. Do you look for fun and hobbies and living for pleasure and weekend escapes and all of that to just simply be the good life? And is the good life going to really bring you satisfaction? What good is the good life? The truth that Solomon wants you to see in these first 11 verses is stop trying to find satisfaction in the good life and start finding your satisfaction in God. Father, I come before you this morning with this simple message from these verses. And Lord, it's 3,000 years old and yet it's just for us today. It's for our American culture. It's for us in Coon Rapids. And so Spirit of God, I pray that you would now focus our attention, quicken our minds and our hearts. And Lord, you say that your spirit is, or your word rather, is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword. I pray that it would, Lord, pierce in and do the work that needs to be done in our lives. Lord, we're thankful for the lives that we have by and large as Americans. And yet, Lord, we pray that our satisfaction would not be found in the good life, but in the God who has given us this life. And so, Lord, help us to see this. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. The preacher is going to go down through here looking at pleasure, and I want you to notice this morning he's going to give 9 different areas of pleasure that he examined. Some of these aren't necessarily wrong. Some of them may be. I'm not going to really necessarily always distinguish between the two. But I want you to notice these different areas of pleasure representative of so many of the different places that people look for meaning in life. I'll have you notice the first one. It's found in chapter 2 and verse number 2 where he says this, I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? We've already looked at the word mirth and talked about the joy and the gladness and happiness that it's supposed to bring. But now he adds to it at the beginning of verse number 2, the word laughter. He adds this word laughter, and as in our American concept, sometimes the word laughter can be used in a neutral sense. It's okay for you to laugh. It's a good thing at times for you to laugh and enjoy laughter. Sometimes it's neutral. Sometimes it's got more of a negative flair to it as well. I'll have you notice a couple passages of scripture in Ecclesiastes. Look at chapter number 7 and verse number 2. Chapter 7 and verse number 2. We'll read several verses here and notice how he uses it. Chapter 7, verse 2, it is better to go to the house of mourning, that'd be like a funeral home, than to go to the house of feasting. There's the feasting, the party. For that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. Sorrow is better than laughter. There you see our word. For by the sadness of the countenance, the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of the mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity. He uses this idea of laughter and mirth in connection with feasting and food and partying. Go to chapter 10 and verse number 19. We'll see it used here again, chapter 10 and verse number 19. A feast is made for laughter, and wine maketh merry, but money answereth all things. You see that several times, maybe not always, but several times in Ecclesiastes, as you go back to chapter number 2, this idea of laughter and mirth is associated with feasting. And so number 1, I would say this, it's quite possible Solomon is referring here to partying. He's trying out partying. He's trying out laughter. He's trying out mirth. He's just trying out all of this. We could apply it to pure laughter if we wanted to, first of all. We could talk about the enjoyments of comedy and comedians. We could talk about how Americans appreciate or go after Saturday Night Live and things like that, looking for satisfaction in that. But here is feasting and birthday parties and club parties and hangouts and banquets and bachelor parties and drunken parties. These are the parties of Belshazzar in Daniel chapter number 5, of Herod when John the Baptist was executed, of Ahasuerus who held a party for, I believe it was 180 days in the book of Esther chapter number 1. That's quite a party. That's quite a long party some of these people were known for. Is the answer to a good life in the party life? Is the answer in all of the laughter and the feasting and the just the celebration of all of that? If you could just live every week for a great party and go to all the big parties, the elegant parties, the wild parties, the enjoyable, would that be meaning in life? If you could just go to the parties. Solomon said, I said that it is mad, and what doeth it? When he says in Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 2 that laughter is mad, he's saying not mad and pouting like we think of it, but he's talking about madness as in the opposite of wisdom. It's the opposite of what is wise. It is lacking insight. It's a life totally devoid of God. It does no good, he goes on to say. What doeth it? What good is this? What does it really accomplish? Living for the party life here. Is that really going to provide satisfaction? Not only the partying life, but he goes in verse number 3. I saw in mine heart to give myself unto wine. Number 2, he talks about wine. The preacher, when it says he sought, he's describing himself as a spy. He's going on reconnaissance. He's going in to check it out here. He's going to evaluate it. He says in verse number 3, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom. It seems quite possible that he as he's checking out wine, narcotics, things like this, he's doing it very wisely. He's not just throwing himself into it in total reckless abandonment here. He's still being wise in some of his evaluation of it here. He's still analyzing it and processing it here and taking the greater look at the whole situation, but he is checking out wine. I mean, hey, maybe Budweiser is correct that great times really are waiting if you grab some buds. Is Miller Lite right that theirs tastes great? That it's the great party life with guys and girls and everyone looking really, really happy? Does it really get any better than this? The fishing trips and the river lots and the college drinking parties and the underage high school drinking parties. Is happiness to be found in cocktails at a special party? Is happiness to be found at happy hour? Is it to be found in the bars and clubs? Is it to be found in being double fisted at a Vikings tailgate party? Is it to be found in knocking down a couple cold ones at a Twins hot summer game? Is it to be found in having a drink with a beautiful woman on the beach? Is it to be found in fine wine and dining at a classy restaurant here? Is satisfaction to be found in drowning your sorrows and the stresses of the day with a few drinks? Is satisfaction to be found in wine? I can't figure it all out. Wisdom doesn't satisfy. I've tried the party life. Let me try wine and see if I can just drown my sorrows away. Let me see if that's the way you're supposed to make it through. Let me see if that's how you're supposed to get through life. What good is the good life? He goes on to yet another category where he says in the middle of verse number 3, and to lay hold on folly. He says, I looked at another category, not only the partying, the wonderful parties and the wine, but he says, I also looked on folly. Folly is a lifestyle that is the opposite of wisdom. Folly is therefore a lifestyle that is the opposite of God. It is the opposite of maturity. It is the opposite of wise choices. It is the way that leads to destruction. If it's a lifestyle that's opposite of God, it is a lifestyle that lives, hey, as if there is no God. As if there is nobody to tell me what's right and wrong. As if all that I have is this life because there's nothing after this life. It's a life that says, I can live however I want to. I don't have to grow up. I don't have to take any responsibility. I can be immature. I can be self-confident. There's no other God out there. I can live immorally if I want to do that. It's the godless life of abandon, recklessness, debauchery, fun, headlong indulgence, immaturely living off your parents, never growing up, shirking responsibility, wasting mountains of time. Is the meaningful life to be found in being a rebel? Being independent, doing whatever you want to do, throwing wisdom out the window and raising Cain all of your life. Is that the good life? The life of foolishness? That would be so fun. That would provide so much meaning. Number 3, it's the wild life. The life of folly. He says, I checked out foolishness till I might see what was the good for the sons of men. Was there any good in this? What good is the good life? I mean, so many people would say, I would just love to do that, just be able to live it up and have a wild, crazy time, and nobody's telling me what to do, and I could just live young and wild and crazy. That would be a wonderful life. And Solomon says, I tried it. I checked it all out. I looked at it to see if there is any good. Notice the end of verse number 3. Till I might see what was good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. Someday they're going to die, and as long as they live, since they're going to die anyway, they might as well just live wild, live crazy here. Drinkings and parties and wildlife is the best solution to the emptiness that's out there. See if that's going to take care of the pain, take care of the meaninglessness. That's really going to find satisfaction and purpose in my life. He says, that's what I looked at. That's what I checked it out, just to see if that was any good. We come to the fourth category and down into verses 4, 5, and 6. And he's going to shift to a category that to some would be described as maybe a little more wholesome, a little more noble. To some of us, it would seem this is an impossible category. We don't have the sort of resources that Solomon had to enjoy some of these things. But I think many of us can readily associate with this category. Number 4, it's the area of works. In verse number 4, I made me great works. The word works there refers to deeds, it refers to accomplishments, it refers to actions and to things that you're building and creating here. You're not just living for partying, you're not just living for wine, you're not just living for the wildlife here. Now you're living to build something, now you're living to accomplish something here. And he's going to describe the different things he tried to build. He says in verse 4, I made me great works, I builded me houses. Maybe the good life is found in you building your dream home. You've driven through the ritzy neighborhoods and you've seen different parts of it that you would incorporate into your house. You've looked through the catalogs. You've seen the real estate websites there that list off your different dream homes. And if you could just get your dream home in just the perfect neighborhood, in just the perfect part of the world that you would like to have, boy, there would really be satisfaction. You've got it all laid out. You've got it all developed here. You understand what exactly would bring you satisfaction. And Solomon says this, I didn't just build myself a great house. I built in me houses. Multiple ones. Oh, I checked it out to see if satisfaction was found in houses. He says, I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. I mean, wouldn't it be so great if right out the back door, you could just walk in the morning and reach out on the tree and grab a fresh orange off of that and just be able to open it up and eat it. And you could walk out to another part of your orchard and pull down an apple off the tree. Or you could go out and get some fresh grapes and either squeeze them into freshly squeezed Welch's grape juice or have some delicious succulent grapes to eat every morning, fresh off of the vine, completely organic, no pesticides, nothing like that. No shipping, no bruises on them from that. Wouldn't it be just wonderful and fresh? The beautiful smells of the blossoms in the springtime and just the smells of the sweet fruit coming through the air. I mean, the good life would certainly be to have your own private vineyard, your own grapes, your own orchards. He describes gardens here. These aren't just gardens in the sense of you got a little plot of land out back with a few green beans and a patch of sweet corn. Garden here is referring to something that would have been walled in and enclosed or something with a great amount of trees. We might use the word parks and preserves, forests and woodland areas, these special beautiful areas to walk through. Just amazing. Nebuchadnezzar, some 500 years after the time of Solomon, built one of the 7 wonders of the world, taking and creating luxurious, beautiful gardens in the deserts of Babylon. King Louis XIV magnified the glory of his palace with a 250-acre garden called the Chateau de Versailles. It had paths that led to flower beds, quiet corners, classical statues, ornamental lakes, and even a canal running through it that you could take gondola rides in, just to make his palace even more beautiful. I've been to New York City and have walked through Central Park where people desire to get away from the city. I've been to different developing cities where people are intent on creating parks and large open spaces for people to have refreshment and just get away. I've biked through the different parks and the neighborhoods and the bike paths of Minneapolis and the suburbs where people enjoy that fresh air. I've seen the pictures and the videos of extensive gardens at great mansions. And surely happiness would just simply be in going from our small little yards to having a large, expansive backyard, all nicely manicured, beautiful there. A moonlit stroll out through my nice, wonderful park there, that would be satisfaction. Being able to go out there and sit down by the brook and just read a book there in peace and quiet. Take a walk in my own private garden and pray to the Lord. Or after the stresses and the busyness of the day, I could just go out and take deep breaths of air walking through my luxurious estate. Boy, that would really be satisfaction. A lovely rose garden, a flower garden all around my home. An evening walk through these palaces. Bushes, you know, where they make a maze and you never know exactly how to get through them. They're 6 or 8 or 10 feet tall. Wouldn't that be great? And at the end of it all, there's a beautiful gazebo right down by the lake. Now that would really be living. That would really be satisfaction if I could just have some gardens in my backyard like that. He says in verse number 6, I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. If you're going to have that big of a garden, you're going to have some water. There are 3 ancient stone pools that still exist near Jerusalem, and tradition says that they're the very pools that Solomon built. Fountains bubbling, elegant streams soothing your soul, opportunities for fishing, swimming pools. Water to provide for the lawns and the gardens and the flowers and the trees and the grass. And how many times today, it may be a little bit different, how many times today people crave for the same water? It's the beachfront property. It's the riverfront property. If I simply had a stream flowing through my property, if I had a private lake, if I had a private pond, if we could just put in a swimming pool, if we could just enjoy a reflecting pool, hey, we've got to have some sort of water going in our backyard here. Even in popular landscaping today, I'm not saying these things are wrong, but we understand the desire people have for a little fountain coming down to this little 6-foot pond or something like that. And everybody today wants the same things. Just some pools of water, just some water. How it would add value to my property. How I would just enjoy sitting out there by the stream and hearing the water flow over the rocks. Oh, that would be the good life. I would find such satisfaction. These are the different things that he has builded. These are the things that he has tried to put together. And many people look for satisfaction in the works that they build. Some would build a business. Some would build an estate. Some would build a movement. Some would build a nest egg. Some would build a community ministry. Some would build a church. These are the railroad tycoons, the monopoly experts, the Vanderbilts, the James A. Hills, and the Daytons. And is there satisfaction in life? From works, from the things that you can build, that you find pleasure in building. What it good is the good life. He comes number 5 to workers in verse number 7 where he says, I got me servants and maidens and had servants born in my house. If you're going to have a property this size and if you're going to have multiple houses and you're going to have great park preserves and you're going to have water and someone's going to have to carry the water over here to water all of this, you don't want to do all the work yourself. So you're going to have servants. And he says, I had servants, I had lots of servants, men servants, female servants, and it was almost like a cattle production here. They got together and they had baby servants. And this was great because this was even more people to do work, and this was even more money for Solomon here. This was great, this was wonderful. I mean, satisfaction in my life would just be having a private butler. If I just had a maid, somebody who could come in and clean up this place, if I had a nanny. I mean, there's so many kids. If I could just have a nanny, this would solve everything here in our lives. Imagine never having to change diapers, never cooking a meal, never mopping the floor, never mowing the lawn, never weeding the garden, because you had a servant to do everything. Not minimizing it if you do clean houses or if you do work with children or anything like this, but we understand Solomon's perspective here of having these ones to do it for him. That would be satisfaction. Number 6, he says, I tried out wealth. Notice what he says in the middle of verse number 7. Also, I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. The great cattle would have been what we think of as cattle. Maybe even horses, cows there especially. The small cattle would have been the flocks, the herds, the ones of the sheep and the goats in that sense. He says, I had the large cattle, I had the small cattle, and I had more cattle. I was a big rancher from Texas, he's saying, and I had the biggest ranch in the whole state. Nobody before me had any more money, had any more cattle than I had. Notice also his wealth, verse 8. I gathered me also silver and gold. Silver was often the currency, the money that they used, and the gold was the valuable treasure there. And he describes the treasure a little more in verse 8, and the peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. He says, I didn't just have a fat bank account, I didn't just have a lot of money, but I had the special treasure, the peculiar treasure of kings and provinces. Because see, kings would come and they would visit Solomon, and they would have to come and bring him tribute, they would have to come pay taxes to him, they would come and bring him special treasures. They would bring things to him just to be nice to him, just to be on Solomon's good side. They would come and ask Solomon questions, and they would pay for their time to see Solomon by giving him different things. And this wouldn't necessarily just be a $5 bill or a check from their nation. This might have been special treasures. Things that were special just to that country. Highly valuable things in those countries. And so Solomon, as it were, could have had a museum with all these wonderful treasures, national treasures from around the world here. Solomon says, I didn't just have money. I had extensive, one-of-a-kind, highly desired relics, masterpieces, valuable things from around the world, works of art. He said, I had that all. Listen, just understand in your mind, would you have meaning if you could be a Rockefeller? If you could be Warren Buffett, if you could be Steve Jobs, if you could be Bill Gates, if you had the millions of the Hollywood stars, if you had the millions of the professional athletes, if you could be paid what the university presidents and CEOs get paid, if you could just get a big raise, if you could win the lottery, if you could go to the casino and hit it rich, that would be meaning. If I could have great herds, and if I could have silver and gold, if I could have the peculiar treasures here. We're not talking about a collection of pocket knives and magnets from around the world here. We're talking about some classy treasures from around the world here. We're talking about something incredibly valuable. If I could just have all of this wealth, I would be happy. Really? Is that the meaning of life? What good is the good life? Number 7, he goes on in the middle of verse number 8, and he says, I gat me men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. Number 7 is the arts. Maybe satisfaction is found in the arts. It's not in the drinking and the wildness and the parties there. It's not in that. He says maybe it's not in the works here and building these things. Maybe it's not in wealth. Maybe it's in the arts. Listen, we can't appreciate this verse. I mean, we're in the iTunes day and the earbuds day and flipping on your radio, and you can hear music almost anywhere at any time of the day. You can get music all the time. They didn't have those capabilities here. And Solomon says, listen, I decided I wanted some music, and so I hired my own private choir. And if he was a little tired at night, instead of turning on Pandora or something and listening to music to put himself to sleep, instead he would say, okay, choir, everybody wake up, get over here, you guys stand up there, and you sing me a lullaby and sing me to sleep. He had his own private choir. Patriotic service, he could have it. He wanted some Christmas music, he could have it. He probably didn't have Christmas music, but you know what I mean. He could have all these different things. He could enjoy his own private choir. Men and women singers here. This would be great. And how many people give so many massive amounts of time and effort and money to go to the concerts and the dramas and the theaters and the arts? The countless downloads from iTunes. If I could have a man cave with surround sound system that could blare out the movie from every angle. If I could just wire my house with speakers so that they would come in, the music would come in everywhere. That would be satisfaction. Not that these things are always wrong, but is that the good life? What good is the good life? Number 8, I'd have you to notice women. It's an interesting thing for us to look at our text where it describes in verse number 8, it says, and the delights in the middle there, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. The word for musical instruments is an interesting word. Just like in our English language, we can have L-E-A-D. It can mean that someone's in charge, they're the leader. They have the lead, or it could refer to that black stuff in the middle of your pencil. It's spelled the same way, right? Lead and lead. Two different words. So in the Hebrew, the word for musical instruments is a word that some people study at and debate a little bit as to what it means. Some people think that it refers to musical instruments. Some people think that it refers to wine bearers, cup bearers. The Greek version of the Old Testament took that view of the word. And some people think that the word refers to concubines. It refers to women that were simply there for the gratification of a man. That's why it says the delights of the sons of men. What they simply enjoy. What brings them satisfaction. Number 8, it's women here. It could be women. 1 Kings chapter 11 verses 1 through 3 tells us that Solomon had 1,000 women. Wives, princesses, concubines. Maybe satisfaction is found in the arts. Maybe it's found in works. Maybe it's found in women. Trying all of that out. Every spring, thousands of teenagers after prom thought they would find meaning in life if they participated in such actions. Perhaps they were drunk at the time. Perhaps they would never date the person again. Perhaps they became pregnant. Perhaps they got a disease. And how many of them found that it never satisfied? Hooking up is old news in our country. We deal with bigger battles in the sexual front than that. But college campuses, spouse swapping, pornography, shacking up, common law marriages, Hollywood movies that just portray all of this and feed and further grow these lusts and these passions. And Solomon, if he's referring there to women, says, I tried that out. I tried women. Did it satisfy? But I would have you to notice number nine and verse number 9. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. He says, you know what? I had so much wealth. I had so much abundance. I had more than everybody else. And I was still wise in using it all. I was still wise in evaluating it all and putting it all together here. I wasn't being foolish in these things. I was being wise here. I had everything. And so notice verse 10. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not from my heart any joy. Number 9, whatever he wanted. You know, maybe satisfaction is just in being able to go after whatever you want. And maybe this morning you're sitting here and you're saying, well, Pastor, I wasn't in any of those first 8 categories. That wasn't what I wanted. I didn't want wine and I wasn't looking for women and I wasn't looking to my work. But there's this area here and Solomon says, fits right here under this category, verse 10, whatever I wanted. If I could just have such resources to be able to say, okay, I want that, I buy it. Okay, I want that, I'm going to go over here and take that. I want this, I'm going to enjoy it. I don't have to wait to pay for it. I don't have to put it on credit. I don't have to take a loan for it here. I don't have to wait till it goes on sale. I want it, boom, I got it. Because I have so much wealth, I can enjoy it. Satisfaction would be able to be, just go out and take whatever I want. That would bring me satisfaction. That's what it'll do. But does it bring satisfaction? Notice the end of verse number 10. For my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my portion of my labor. Does it bring joy and happiness to be able to get everything you want? Solomon says this. Yeah, it does. You know what? There is some pleasure in this. There's going to be some pleasure in women. There's going to be pleasure in wine. There's going to be pleasure in wild parties. There's going to be pleasure in building things. There's going to be pleasure in having great wealth. There's going to be pleasure in the arts. He says, I did rejoice. The word for rejoice in verse number 10 is that same word for mirth there. I had mirth. There were some pleasures. Moses, Hebrews chapter 11 and verse number 25, knew that there were pleasures of sin, but for a season. He said, yeah, I understood that there is some joy and happiness. Look, if Solomon stood up here and said to you this morning, listen, you try all these things and there is no happiness in all of these things, you would all know he's lying. Solomon says, no, I understand there is some joy. There is some fun in these things. They can be fun. But the question is deeper. Is it just fun or do they really provide meaning? Do they really provide purpose in life? Do they really provide the satisfaction when you lay awake at night thinking about how you're living your life and what you're going after? Do you really have satisfaction or do you feel like you're living for what doesn't matter and you've tried this and you've tried this and you've tried this and it was fun that night. It was fun that week. It was fun that weekend. It was fun that day. It was fun at the art center. It was fun at the bar. It was fun over here. Yes, it was fun for a few hours, but the next morning wasn't so great. And when the bills came in, it wasn't so great. And the next day when you had to go to work, it wasn't so great. You sit here and you look at yourself and you'd say, is this really where there's satisfaction? He says, oh, in verse number 10, my heart rejoiced in all my labor. Ah, there was some fun in it. But now he's going to look deeper at it. Verse number 11. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought and in all the labor that I labored to do. I'm talking about all these things he tried. And behold, take note, look at it. Three things. Number one, all was vanity. There's our word that we saw at the very beginning, vanity. He says it's empty. It's meaningless here. It's short-lived here. It is frustration. Number two, it's vexation of spirit. Behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit. Vexation of spirit is chasing the wind. It's herding cats. It's trying to shepherd the wind and make it go the way you want to. And the result is a vexation. It's a frustration in your life. He says, I tried it all out. Yeah, there was a little bit of joy, but ultimately it was vanity. It was frustration here. And he says, last of all, in verse number 11, and there was no profit under the sun. Or as we've been saying all the way along, what good was it? There were no real benefits. There were no really long-term blessings to it. It really didn't get me anywhere. It really didn't give me anything in this life. It ultimately benefited me nothing. And it's as if Solomon is looking and he's saying, listen, I tried the good life. I checked it all out. What good is the good life here? Where's the meaning in all of this? He cries out for it. And my friend, Ecclesiastes has a message that God does want you to enjoy life, but the enjoyment of life and the satisfaction and the meaning of life is not found in all these things. It's found in the giver. And once you enjoy the giver, then you can enjoy the life that he gives to you. People live for diversion. They live for these things to bring them happiness, and they try to bring themselves meaning and significance in this life. That's what they're trying to do. One person said that the modern West is the first society that does not have to teach its citizens any answers to the questions as to why they exist. We're so busy in all these little things that don't matter, that keep our minds from thinking about the deep questions of life. Why am I here? What is my purpose? Who created me? Who gave me life? But no, we've got all these different religions that give us these different answers, and we got all these different painkillers from our happinesses that we don't have to struggle with the questions of the meaning of life that he struggles with in this passage here. People just simply live to have fun. 25, 30 years ago, a young lady produced a song that immediately became popular in U.S. culture and around the world. Since then, over 30 artists have sung the song, making it not just a theme song of the 1980s, but a song in today's culture as well, even as Miley Cyrus several years ago made her own version. The song describes exactly what the preacher had to say. Girls just want to have fun. It doesn't matter if they stay out all night. It doesn't matter if their parents do not approve. It doesn't matter if they ruin their lives. It doesn't matter if they do all sorts of things that are wrong and wicked and terrible. Girls just want to have fun. They work all day so they can just have fun. And that fun in the song is not an innocent, I just want to have fun. It's the things that are exactly described here. We live in a culture that believes that meaning is found in having fun. It's found in Mall of America. It's found in the amusement parks, in the one-night stand, in the hanging at the bars, in the owning the homes, in the enjoying the arts, in the pampered life. But meaning and significance to life is not found in just the good life. The good life, Solomon says, is no good. Do not expect to find meaning in the American dream. This idea of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is not something that our founding fathers put together and dreamed up and created. This idea of pursuing happiness, this is something that our God gave to us. Even the Declaration of Independence says that we are endowed by our Creator with these rights, the pursuit of happiness. The Creator gave us this passion to pursue happiness. But not only did He give you that passion to pursue happiness, He gave you the answer, the solution to that. For Psalm 16 and verse number 11 says, in thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore. Not just a temporary happiness, but an eternal one. Pleasures forevermore. God made it so that you would want to chase after happiness. You would want to chase after pleasure. But He also made it so that every other road in the whole wide world is a dead end, except the road that leads to Him. And you won't believe it. You wouldn't expect it. At your first glance, you'd say, that'll never bring me pleasure. But you go down the pleasure, you go down the road of walking with God and enjoying God, and it is the only life of pleasure. 2 Peter 1 and verse number 3 says you have everything that you need for life and godliness by knowing Him. Listen, Christian, do you really believe it? If you do believe it, then you're going to spend time every day with God, because that's where joy and happiness is. You're going to make a relationship with God the priority of your life. You're going to make a relationship of helping other people in this life a priority. Coming to church and spreading the gospel, you're going to make that a priority. The psalmist said in Psalm 73:25, "Whom have I in heaven but thee? And there is none upon earth that I desire beside thee." Lamentations 3:24, "The Lord is my portion." John 10 and verse number 10, Jesus said, "I am come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly." Mark 8 and verse number 36, "For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul?" And after studying a passage like this, no wonder we come to Hebrews chapter 13 and verse number 5. "Let your conversation, your life, be without covetousness and be content with such things as you have. For he has said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee." I have Jesus Christ and I don't need all these other things here. I don't find my satisfaction in all these other things because I have Christ. And this morning, I wonder if you've been just a little bit tempted. You've been the mouse chasing after the cheese here. If I could just have this, if I could just have this pleasure, if I could just have the good life, if I could just have fun, if I could just get a little bit more money in my life, then I would find satisfaction. And Solomon says, listen, I've been down that path more than anybody else in the whole wide world. And let me save you a trip down that dead end road. It's not found in that. It's only found in Jesus Christ. Christian, if you're chasing those things, stop going down that road and get on the right one. Maybe this morning you've never put your faith and trust in Jesus Christ and you've not found meaning in life. And today you need to. When the good life isn't so good, you're supposed to turn to the Lord Jesus Christ.
Visit us at 11164 Hanson Boulevard or online at coonrapidsbaptist.org.